26. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. A group of masked warriors ran toward them, pulling something that resembled the sleds of the skimmers who had once attacked them. Siv couldn't pick out anyone else in the throng, but she knew the figure being pulled on the sled as well as she knew anything.
It's Keldo.
Phasma had her quadnox up, and she had an even better view.
Keldo, all of the Skaia, and all of the claws. This is madness.
Looks more like revenge, Brandel muttered.
The group was coming on quickly, sliding down the dune toward their vehicles, where Gosta was just exiting her gav and looking back for the source of the noise. She must have seen them too, as she spun back around and ran as fast as she could toward the fence, hampered by her turned ankle. Siv took a few steps forward to help the girl, but Phasma caught her wrist, the hard glove of the trooper uniform digging into Siv's flesh.
You can't save her. We must keep going.
Behind them, Brendel shouted,
They can't be allowed to take the vehicles. Fire!
The troopers put their blaster rifles to their shoulders, and they pelted the vehicles and the oncoming attackers with red-hot laser fire. The first gav went up in a ball of flame that caught the second, and the third lost a wheel and listed sadly to the side.
Phasma! Help!
Gosta called, her arms outstretched toward the warrior she'd idolized. But Phasma merely shook her head, her stormtrooper helmet a flat, white mask. Siv tried to pull away, but Phasma's grip tightened.
She's one of us, Siv begged.
She's too weak to go on.
Then we'll carry her.
Keldo's warriors had almost reached Gosta, and the troopers focused their blasters on the crowd. Smoke filled the air, providing a hazy backdrop for exploding clouds of sand and blood-red lasers. Siv yanked and pulled, but Phasma wouldn't release her. She couldn't watch as the laser fire rocked into the mob of people she'd known all her life, as bodies cried out and screamed and fell, so she put her head down against the armor on Phasma's shoulder, a strangely personal gesture that Phasma allowed. When Phasma pushed her away, Siv turned around. Behind what was left of the mob, Gosta lay on the ground among a dozen other bodies. The girl wasn't moving, her eyes open to the sky. Little Gosta, the sweetest and most idealistic of the Skyr warriors, was dead.
No!
Phasma still had Siv's wrist, as if correctly guessing that Siv would be compelled to run toward the younger girl. Not only because there might be some hope of saving her, but also because to die alone without helping her people would leave Gosta's spirit uneasy and Siv's responsibility undone. Siv's fingers itched for the detractors in her pack, for the calm she felt when she completed her holy rite, and her arms ached to hold the girl close and tell her she had been a good and brave companion, a worthy warrior of the Skyr. But Phasma was tugging Siv away toward the rent in the fence, and soon Torben joined in, pulling Siv unwillingly along, murmuring apologies and kindnesses that did nothing to soften the blow of her loss. All those bodies, or at least many of them, had received the gift of the Detraxers, proudly wearing green stripes of the Oracle Salve, and now they would never contribute their own proper shares. When she'd chosen to side with Phasma and leave the Skyr on this quest, Siv had known she was abandoning her people, denying them the protective bomb they needed to survive and stay healthy. She'd planned to return before they began to suffer, to help them build a new life in the stars with better medicines than anything she could provide. Now her people were dying. Guilt rested heavy on her shoulders, and it felt like a thirst that could never be slaked. Siv's feet moved in the sand as if it were quicksand. She ventured a last look back at Chirk, where the Gand lay dead, toppled on the ground and leaking a fluid that wasn't blood. The beetles that had bedecked him ignored his moisture, leaving his face and body to feast instead upon the destruction rendered by the blaster fire. Underneath the beetles, the insectoid alien had worn the blood-red robes of the Aratu, his segmented feet bare and his three-fingered hands open to the sky. Siv looked to Brendel, his blaster still in his hand, but there was no way to know if the strange guardian's death had been collateral damage or a purposeful execution. Torben and Phasma dragged Siv away for real now, each grasping the top of one of her arms. Her detractors weighed heavy on her back, to see so many nutrients lost. When the shimmering gold beetles boiled up out of the sand to cover Gosta, Siv finally turned away, shaking her arms loose, and found her legs again. The last thing she saw was the crowd of Skyer and Claws, those who hadn't been hit by blaster fire and claimed by beetles, running across the sand, war cries erupting from their masks as they pulled Keldo's sled behind them. She had shared his bed, but never seen his mask before, and from this distance, she couldn't tell what might have inspired it. Harsh slashes of black, white, and red were surrounded by a mane of black feathers. The sight was enough to get her running. They jogged parallel to the high fence, passing sign after wind-scoured sign, until they came to a rip in the metal wires. One of the troopers held it back while everyone crawled through, and Torben was nearly too big to fit. Siv was worried the loose wires would cut him and call forth the beetles, but Phasma silently shoved him aside and dug a deep furrow in the sand to make more room. Once they were all through, Brendel held the two pieces of fence together and slapped some sort of binder around the wire, holding it tight.
"It won't last long," he said, echoing Siv's thoughts, "but it will slow them down."
Once inside the fence, nothing seemed different from the other side. The sand was still gray, the sun still beat down, and the air didn't feel any more dangerous than it had before they'd crossed the border, as Chirk had called it. But Siv shivered anyway, sure to her bones that something was desperately wrong here. The words the Gand and Brendel Hux had exchanged, weapon, radioactive, nuclear, were on repeat in her mind as she probed the environment for some new sensation that would inform her of what to fear. Phasma guided them in the direction of Brendel's ship, and as Siv had never doubted her leader's unerring navigation, she didn't doubt it now. She took her place, after Phasma and before Torben, running easily and deeply feeling the empty spots in their formation that should have been taken by eager Gosta and cheerful Carr. They had left their land as five warriors, and even if the Deadlands didn't live up to their threat, they would only ever be three. Four, maybe, if Brendel's medicine was as good as he promised it was, and the child could survive whatever poison had destroyed this place. They went down a long dune, and the land flattened out a little, as it had here and there throughout their travels. Judging by the discs she'd seen at Terpsichore Station, Siv thought this meant that long ago these areas had been naturally lower, true valleys and craters that had once held water and plants. At first, there was no sign of any such topography, but as they went on, strange shapes and shadows began to appear in the monochrome gray. They began to pass tall posts, each leaning sideways like a broken finger reaching from the ground. Farther on, a peculiar skeleton of metal rose proudly from the sand, looping and whirling like the spine of the giant eels that washed up on the rocks sometimes at home.
"Were they animals?" she asked.
Brendel had fallen behind, slowing them all with his lack of physical conditioning, and he held his side and wheezed as he spoke.
"Amusements," he said. "They once guided vehicles that people rode for fun. An archaic form of entertainment on planets without enough technology to stimulate the populace from inside their own homes. This planet had much land and little sense."
As they went on, forced by Brendel's reduced speed to slow from a jog to a fast walk, Phasma moved to the rear. She couldn't walk more than a few moments without spinning to scan the horizon behind them. Keldo and his people hadn't shown themselves yet, but they'd be following. In such an empty, deserted place, and with the beetles and who knew what other horrors hiding under the sand, there was nowhere to hide. Dusk fell, and they hurried toward a series of bleached white structures poking up from the sand like shattered teeth. Although their walls seemed sound, there were no roofs to the buildings, and sand filled them inside, dusted high into the corners.
"Homes," Brendel said before Siv could ask, "and we'd best shelter in one tonight. We can't go much farther without rest. If the other group has been on foot this whole time, they'll be no better off."
Siv knew well enough that Brendel's "we" actually referred only to himself. The Skyer warriors were more than capable of walking for several more hours, and the troopers were in excellent physical condition. But Brendel wasn't made for Parnassos. When he pulled down his goggles and fabric wraps to rub sweat from his forehead, his reddened face was bleached white around the edges. There were deep purple hollows under his eyes, and his muscles quivered. His hand hadn't left the stitch in his side, and he stumbled every few steps, although there was nothing to impede his footwork. He must have recognized how dire his situation was, as he allowed Siv to swipe thick lines of salve across his cheeks.
There!
Phasma pointed to the last structure in the grouping, which sat a little higher and had part of what had once been a roof.
PT-2445 will take first watch, Brendel said. We'll switch every 2 hours. After the third watch, we'll keep going.
Casting nervous looks at the sand behind them, they walked through the empty doorway and spread out around the building, which was divided into many rooms, all filled with sand. Although it was clear the rooms had once been tall enough even for someone of Phasma's stature, the sand had filled the structure so that its walls were just tall enough to provide a decent backrest for Torben, with perhaps a meter of space until jagged metal support beams poked out of the uniform white. Siv went to a corner, sitting down hard and pawing through her bags for the reassuring touch of her detractors. It was her duty to make sure everyone had a last application of Oracle's salve before sleep claimed them, and the ritual of the task calmed her. Torben sat down beside her, and she gently drew lines of salve on his cheeks and forehead. They were near Brendel's ship, and whatever hidden dangers lurked in the Deadlands, she longed to protect him.
Thank you, he murmured.
Body to body, dust to dust, she replied. Her mother had explained that it was part of a far older ritual, but the ceremonial words always made her feel tied to the planet and to her own lineage, for all that her mother was the only relation she remembered. When she offered the tin of salve to Brendel and his troopers, she received brief thanks from Pete and Huff, both out of their helmets, but Brendel only nodded, which would have been a rudeness worth fighting over back home in the Skyre. As she approached Phasma, Siv realized that she would never again smear the lines on Gosta's cheeks, fussing over the girl and reminding her to drink enough water. Phasma was the only one sitting outside the building, her back to what would have been the outer wall. She still wore her helmet, and Siv's curiosity about the impact of Randorus's beating continued unabated. When she held out the tin to Phasma, Phasma took off her gloves, scooped out her portion, and paused for a moment, as if she'd forgotten what to say. When her words came, they were clipped and atonal, the very mimic of Brendel, if he'd been polite enough to say them.
Thank you.
Siv bowed her head slightly. Body to body, dust to dust. She stayed standing, though, hoping Phasma would say something, or take off her helmet, or do anything that would provide comfort or understanding. Back in the Skyre, Keldo had been the voice and heart of their leadership, the one who always knew what to say, whether it involved offering kindness, support, company, or admonishment. Back then, Phasma's quiet had seemed like one half of a whole, as if her part of their sibling bond was the realm of the physical, of protection and defense and valor. Now, without Keldo's tenderness and empathy to ground her, Phasma seemed cold and inhuman. The helmet only served to heighten her resemblance to a droid, like the ones back in Terpsichore Station, which had never changed their expression even as they did horrible things. And yet the way Phasma focused on the sand, it was clear she felt something. You can take extra, Siv said, almost without thinking as she weighed the tin in her hand. It was Gosta's portion for the day, and years of carefully monitoring her people's needs had trained Siv to mete out exactly what was required and hold back enough for all. Now it only served to remind her that Gosta had been little more than a child, for all that she'd sought to belong among the warriors and acquitted herself well in battle.
Save it. Perhaps it will keep us going tomorrow.
Phasma's voice was flat and clipped, and Siv could tell, even with the helmet, that Phasma wasn't watching her. The sickness that Chirk mentioned. Do you feel it? Phasma's helmet shook once.
No.
I wonder if we'll even know. If it will come on like the fever, hot and itching. Or if it will sneak up in the night like the old barking cough once did. Or perhaps he was merely mad.
Perhaps.
Siv waited several long minutes, hoping Phasma would say something, anything, to reassure her that her leader had not, in fact, begun to head in the direction of madness herself. The longer Phasma sat there, scanning the horizon, holding her portion of salve while not removing her helmet to apply it, doing and saying nothing, her hand on her blaster, the further she felt from the girl Siv had grown up with and learned to trust with her life. Siv tried one last gambit. "Do you think we'll make it?" At that, finally, the helmet turned toward her and canted up. She felt Phasma's keen gaze crawling over her and wondered what her leader saw in her lieutenant.
"Perhaps."
Siv turned to leave, but she couldn't go until she'd had her say. Even if it was like prying sea creatures from their shells, she would know something of Phasma's mind as they entered a place that truly terrified her. "Brendel Hux says we can make it. He says his ship will be there and his people will come. He says they'll take us into the stars and give us medicine, that they can fix whatever is harmed here. Do you think it's true?" Phasma's helmet clicked as her gaze left Siv and returned to the gray horizon, the setting sun casting long, black shadows from the metal bones of long-dead civilizations.
"We can only act as if it's true. We can only keep going."
Siv nodded and walked away, considering. Phasma was right. At this point, there was nothing else to be done. They could only press forward, believing that Brendel Hux would be their savior. If he was lying, they would be dead soon enough anyway. Siv woke, covered by Torben's huge arm and a dusting of sand. Every crevice of her body itched, tortured by the feathery gray stuff, and she flung it off and stood, trying to find her balance. The grit stung her eyes, and she brushed it from her eyelashes as she faced the direction from which they were being pursued. She didn't see Keldo and his band, but she had no doubt there was little time to waste. Phasma was already awake, in conversation with Brendel. Siv's brow wrinkled, and she put on her own mask again. It irked her that she had to work so hard to get a few meaningless words out of her leader, while Phasma seemed more than happy to converse with Brendel in secret. In her opinion, Phasma should have been loyal to her people first, and her allies second. Phasma apparently did not see it the same way anymore. "Get up, you big brute." Siv rubbed Torben's shoulder, smiling as he twitched awake and frowned at the sand covering him as if he were a great mountain.
"I'm buried," he said in surprise. "Another hour and you'd have lost me."
"Hardly. You're the biggest lump in view." It made her feel good, tending to Torben, giving him bits of food and his morning share of water and spreading him with extra salve. With Gosta gone, she ached to take care of someone, to make some kind of nurturing connection. As for Torben, he put up with her clucking and pulled her into a hug, and it felt so good to be held that she felt her eyes prick with tears as she slipped off her mask and buried her face in his chest, a stolen moment of comfort that felt all the more precious in such a precarious situation. If the Gand had told the truth, they were headed toward the deadliest place on Parnassos, and that was saying a lot. Every other enemy Siv had faced was something that could be fought head-on, opposing groups, sea beasts, even a monster like Randorus. But whatever creeping death awaited them was some sort of disease with unknown symptoms that could already be taking over her body somewhere deep inside. When the child wiggled within her, barely a burble of bubbles, she put a hand to her belly and offered up thanks. At least what she held most precious was still untouched. So far. They set out before the sun had truly breached the sky, and Brendel grumbled that they should be walking at night when the air was cool and clear, rather than saving their work for the heat of the day. Siv expected Phasma to share her own thoughts on the matter, but she remained silent. In the Skyre, Phasma would have had a sharp reprimand for any warrior in her company who complained or questioned her judgment, and there would have been punishment for anyone who slowed the entire party down with their lack of vigor and energy. Yet Phasma matched their pace to Brendel's without a word, subtly resetting their path every time they started to veer off. Siv was too well trained by now to question this strange and silent battle of wills. Her sole task was to get to Brendel's ship alive, preserving her child and Torben as well as she could. Even if she had her doubts, Phasma was her leader, and Siv was duty-bound to follow her orders, even when she felt conflicted by Brendel's interference. They left the long, empty buildings, and new shapes rose up against the morning sky. These weren't small homes like those filling the last area. They were huge stations, as big as Terpsichore or Aratu, but ravaged. The first one was missing part of its metal roof, with black shadows ghosting up its white walls. The farther they walked, the more damaged the buildings appeared. Their roofs were gone. Their walls burned and cracked and missing great chunks. Siv felt woozy as she looked around and tried to imagine what could do so much damage to such a large area. Even the mighty ocean took years to chip away at the stone cliffs of the Skyre. After they stopped to take care of personal needs behind a particularly mangled structure, Siv noticed several black shadows shaped like people painted on the wall. "What is that? More art?" she asked Brendel, who was waiting nearby in the shade of a wall, his goggles and wraps undone as he scratched at his eyes. He turned to follow her glance.
"Residue from a nuclear blast," he said, brow furrowed and mouth pursed. "We must be near the epicenter."
"Residue?"
"Oh, look. People were standing in front of the wall when the bomb hit. Everything exploded, and the power of the blast disintegrated them where they stood. Their remains were sort of pressed into the wall by the power of the explosion. Do you see?"
"No. I don't know what an explosion is."
Everyone except Torben had gathered around now to listen, and Brendel put his hands on his hips and considered them. He'd put his black outfit back on sometime after Aratu, and the color was being leached out by the sun, the careful pleats and folds and puffs dusted with gray sand and wrinkled. The once shiny black boots were dull and cracked. His beard had grown out to a patchy red and white scruff, and his face was flushed an unhealthy red, with a few developing spots like the ones Siv had suffered during her teen years.
"Look, it's very complicated," Brendel said. "But you know what lightning is?"
Siv nodded.
"Of course."
"Imagine a huge bolt of lightning, so big and with so much power that it destroys everything as far as the eye can see. Every person, every animal, every plant, every building. Only the very strongest surfaces made of the most resilient minerals might survive it. Organic matter is disintegrated, utterly destroyed, and leaving nothing behind. The entire sky goes black with smoke, blocking the sun and turning the rain to poison. Literally nothing survives."
"I can't imagine that,"
Siv said, but her voice was hollow. She couldn't imagine it, but she could understand it. Brendel's description explained so much about Parnassus, about why there was nothing left. She'd always been told that the planet itself had been the cause of her people's destruction, but this made more sense. Of course it was people. People had destroyed this place, and people had left behind the few survivors to piece together a violent life filled with pain and toil. Torben had rejoined them and heard the last bit, his face flushed red with fury as if he would gladly drag the person responsible out of whatever hole they were hiding in and beat them to death. He put his arm around Siv as if wishing he could protect her and the child from all the sorrows Parnassus had inflicted.
"Who did this?"
Phasma asked. Brendel chuckled.
"Isn't it obvious? The Konstar Mining Corporation. Whether they were responsible for the bombing, whether a rival corporation accomplished it, or whether their faulty technology triggered a nuclear meltdown, it was clearly them. And instead of fixing their mess, they abandoned the entire planet."
"Do they still do business in your world?"
"They are a large and profitable business in the galaxy, yes."
"Something should be done."
Brendel nodded, looking crafty.
"Perhaps that can be arranged. They own many valuable assets, and the First Order always needs more assets."
Siv felt that Phasma and Brendel had just reached an unspoken arrangement, that they had some prior understanding of how their paths would, well, not intersect. Probably not intertwine either, as Phasma didn't seem to particularly like him. Align was probably the better word. Brendel had something in mind for Phasma to do, some special place among his people that would benefit him. Brendel was the first to walk on, turning from the imprinted shadows as if he'd finished looking at a particularly boring rock. The troopers followed him, as did Phasma, who quickly outpaced him to lead. Siv and Torben lingered a moment, and he pulled her more tightly to his side. The black shadows appeared to be two different sizes, and Siv imagined she saw adults and children there, an entire family group reduced to nothing but a hazy image on a wall.
"The faster we walk, the faster we'll find safety," Torben reminded her.
She turned in his arms to look up into his unmasked face and immediately put the back of her hand to his forehead. "Do you feel feverish?" she asked. For though his anger had fled, his color remained high. A few tiny spots lurked under his scruffy brown beard, and his eyes were bright green against pink whites. His skin was cool against hers, though, and when she put her fingertips to his pulse, his heart was beating steady and strong.
"I feel fine," he said, eyebrows drawing down in confusion. "And you?"
She put her hand to her own cheek. Her skin, too, felt cool, but her fingers danced over a few bumps at her temples, where her hair pulled back from her scalp. "Chirk said there would be a sickness," she said. "I wonder if this is how it starts." Torben gently pulled her mask into place and urged her to walk as the others disappeared around the next building.
"We'll ask Brendel later,"
he said, giving her a squeeze.
"Nothing to be done for it now. I feel strong as ever."
He thumped his chest and grinned at her, and she returned the smile for all that it felt false. She'd learned much of bodies, tending the detraxers, and before that, caring for the elderly and infected in the Nautilus. When several people all showed similar signs of some new malady, it was never a good omen. But Torben was right. There was nothing to be done but keep walking. Whatever this illness was, she'd never heard of it, and had no curatives in her pack or in her memory. All she could do was make sure everyone took extra salve and liniment, and that it would continue to provide some sort of protection. Siv and Torben jogged to catch up with the others, climbing up the slight hill of a dune. Every time they clambered up out of a low spot, she grew excited for the sight of whatever lay over the ridge. Even if what she saw generally brought only trouble, from the skin wolves to the Aratu to the fence and the dead lands beyond, she still felt a swell of optimism. This time, finally, her hopes were answered. They topped the dune when the sun was high and looked down on two things: utter devastation and the remains of a ship.